Now, if you take your New Testament, turn to Matthew chapter 9. We're going to look at another section in the account that we started this morning in our lesson on Matthew, how that he was called to a higher calling, and then he gave that great feast or that meal, invited a lot of guests, he had Jesus and the disciples, and including the publicans that were also in that area, and likely other people that were identified simply as sinners, publicans and sinners. How many of you in this room have ever been sick? You say, well, that's a foolish question. Sick. Okay. How many of you have ever been to the doctor? How many of you were sick and didn't go to the doctor, hoping and praying it'd get better over time, right? I'll tough it out. How many of you tried to tough it out and it just got worse? Well, what made you go to the doctor? Now, I ask all those questions to lead into our study tonight because Jesus uses a metaphor, an illustration here, and then he quotes a passage in the Old Testament in Hosea to talk about a spiritual condition. Though he uses a physical illustration, it's easy to get caught up in the physical illustration and miss the point as to what the spiritual application is. The scribes and the Pharisees that were there at that particular area saw Jesus, according to the account, and his disciples eating in Matthew's house with these publicans, along with Matthew, who is a publican, and the sinners of that town. And they asked not Jesus, they asked his disciples, why does your master eat with publicans and sinners? That's in verse 11. The Bible does not say that the disciples gave any answer. As a matter of fact, the next verse, verse 12, says, when Jesus heard that. Well, technically, if you study the life of Jesus enough in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you'll find he didn't even need to hear the words of people. He could read their minds, being the Son of God, being deity in the flesh. But he heard what they said to his disciples, and then he makes this comment. They that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. Go ye and learn what this meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice. Quoting Hosea chapter 6, verse 6. And then he says, for I am not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Now, this account is only found in Matthew. It's not found in Mark. It's not found in Luke. It's not found in John. This is the only time that this encounter is mentioned. It's quite interesting, at least to me, that Matthew is the one that gives the account. It was actually in his house that all of this transpired. Now, he gives, therefore, a detail of our study that we've done today that these other accounts don't give. We stuck basically in the Gospel of Mark chapter 2 this morning, and in Luke 5 gives some details about it being Matthew's house and not just anybody's house. But here is a good work that this man is doing. Actually, he is what we call given to hospitality, as the Bible would talk about what Christians are to be and do. And yet there is criticism that comes from these so-called critics. The religious critics, by the way, they're not secular critics, they're religious critics now. You would think a person who was religiously minded wouldn't criticize a good work, right? But these are religious critics. I think you and I know the fact that secular critics are going to criticize religion just as a whole. But it's a different kind of criticism when it comes from within. When it comes from folks that are supposed to be godly minded. But the criticism is not of godly people, though they would claim to be followers of God. So this is an illustration that Jesus uses of what I will call calling on a physician. He used the word physician, we'd say calling on the doctor. I don't know how you feel about doctors, surgeons, even the medical field as a whole. And I think you and I realize that in the world that we live, because when sin entered in, and with sin comes death, and obviously there's things that produce death, sickness and the process of dying just goes with the nature of sin. And the point being, there's always going to be sickness and sorrows and aches and pains as long as we're in this life. But Jesus is using that commonly known illustration of physical sickness from a spiritual vantage point. Sin affects the mind. Would you agree to that? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. From the heart proceed certain things. Jesus talks about like adultery, fornication, covetousness, all these sins. What is it? It comes from the mind. It comes from the heart, the desires. Okay? So Jesus did not just come to teach what to do to be right with God. He came to change the hearts of people. Now, if a person is sick, but they don't think they're sick, how sick are they? We call it being in denial, isn't it? You don't look good. Do you feel good? Well, I feel great. Why would you say that? Honestly, you don't look good. If everybody in this room walked up to you tonight before you left and said, "Do you feel good? You sure don't look good." And there wasn't anything feeling wrong with you, how would you ultimately, as you walked out of here, feel? By the way, there are such things as psychosomatic illnesses. So, what do you do in the need to call on a physician? Jesus is using the publicans and the sinners as people who call on a doctor. And why do they call on a doctor? Because they understand something. What about the people that don't think they need a doctor? Though are in many ways worse than the ones who know the issue and know where the cure is found. Okay, so this is the illustration. There are two perspectives that you're going to find in this account. First of all, there is the perspective of those that are in company with Jesus. By the way, he's sort of illustrating himself here as the physician. We call him the great physician. As a matter of fact, we have songs in our song books to that effect, right? How I love the great Redeemer, referring to redemption. And talk about, you know, the great physician now is here, the sympathizing Jesus. So the illustration would come right out of this particular passage, this illustration. So these people, Matthew, the disciples, other publicans, people from the town who realized that they were sinners. What is it about Jesus that they are drawn to him? What is it about him? Well, number one, according to the account in Matthew's account and in Mark 2 and Luke 5, Jesus has already been healing physically multitudes of people. Blind see, lepers are made whole or well. People are coming from everywhere with their physical ailments, and he is healing every one of them. He's having compassion on the people. By the way, as a direct quote, Matthew 8 says, from Isaiah 53, he bore our weakness and carried our sorrows. Denoting the fact that when this Messiah comes, he will have the power, the ability, and the want to take care of all of our problems, Isaiah 53. So when he's healing these people, he's not just healing these people because they need healing and he's compassionate. It is true they need healing and it is compassionate. But he is fulfilling Isaiah 53, a statement made in Isaiah 53 of the picture of this. Can this not be the Messiah? Of all of what this man is doing? Now, there's a lot of things that he still had to fulfill before this point, but that was to be an indicator. Now, people that didn't have prejudice, you understand the concept of prejudice, because prejudice is a big problem in the first century. As a matter of fact, in the 21st century, in any century for that matter. In other words, you don't need to discuss with me what I need to do to fix anything. You need to go work on other folks. By the way, that's pride, self-centered. A lot of things that you'd find in the first century among these people. By the way, no one can really come to Jesus who's not going to humble himself. You know, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord and he'll do what? He'll lift you up. Okay, First Peter chapter 5. So the picture is what? There's a concept here. Those that come to Jesus and then those that are critical of Jesus. And you know, there were people that came around Jesus, but they weren't there to be with Jesus in the sense like Matthew. Simon Peter, Andrew, James, John. None of these people were critical of Jesus. They didn't understand a lot, but they're not critical. Here are people that constantly are going to find fault. Surely nobody does that with a New Testament Christian, right? Surely religious people would not criticize other people who are Christians, or New Testament Christians, I would say. Okay? Now, if you're not feeling good, or maybe you're feeling good, and someone is constantly around you and all they do is needling you, you want out? You want help? You want to find somebody that can help you? Over and over and over, the Bible talks about putting your trust in the Lord. The book of Psalms is filled with passages. David wrote so many psalms, particularly from the first chapter to the 41st chapter of the book of Psalms. He talks about my enemies surround me. He uses illustrations of like being in the deep, being in the ocean, being overwhelmed with sorrow and affliction and troubles and so forth. Oh Lord, to whom shall I turn? Jesus even quotes these statements from the cross, like Psalm 31, verse 5. Into thy hands I commit my spirit. That's the last words out of Jesus' mouth before he dies. But Psalm 31, verse 5 was written by David to refer not to David's death. Jesus will refer to his death, but to his afflictions. Lord, to whom shall I go? Into thy hands I commit my spirit, or my life, as it were. So, again, in this same setting, you got two kinds of people. By the way, look at our world. You got those that are of Christ and those that are out of Christ. And literally, are that not the only two sections that there are in the world? Those that are with me and those that are against me. Those that gather with me, those that scatter abroad. Jesus uses very, very kind of language. Okay, now let's go to the next point. How do you treat this problem of sin? You know, here's a group of people. They don't think there's anything wrong with them. They're critical of Jesus because he's dealing with people that they would say need help. But why are you eating? Why are you associating with publicans and sinners? Why does your master eat with them? Well, by the way, how do you help people that need help if you don't have anything to do with them? You know, is the world lost out here? That doesn't have the gospel? So what do we do? We just sort of stay in our homes, stay in our church buildings, and so on. So, you know, everybody welcome. You know, everybody at a church building has got a sign that says, everybody welcome, right? Obviously, they don't have signs that says, nobody welcome here. Stay away, right? Everybody welcome. Well, the concept here is there is no solution to the problem if you, first of all, don't understand need. Notice the specific term Jesus uses here in verse 12. They that behold, H-W-O-L-E, or W-H-O-L-E, need not a physician, but they that are sick. The implication is, it is those who know they are sick who go to the physician. That's why they are here, and that's why I am here. Now, he's using what I would call sarcasm here, or irony. The idea here is the very critics are the ones who are really sick here. Not to say that publicans and sinners didn't need the Lord, but the real critics here, they're the ones who are really sick. He says, now those that are whole, which that's what they thought they were, though they weren't. They that are whole don't need a physician. I'm not come to call, in other words, to summon for help. Okay, I'm the great physician. Come unto me, all ye that labor and heavy laden. I'll give you rest. Matthew 11:28. I'm not come to call the righteous. The righteous. By the way, is he implying that they are righteous? No, they're not righteous. He knows that. Romans 3:10 says, there is none righteous. No, not one. And if there were ever anybody that thought they were righteous, it was the scribes and the Pharisees. Jesus actually gave a parable in Matthew 18, verse 9, that says, He said this because they supposed that they were, or they said that they were righteous and despised others. That's the parable or the illustration of the two that went to the temple to pray, one a publican, the other to the Pharisee. And the Pharisee stood thus and said, what? God, I thank you, right? I thank you, you didn't make me like other men. Well, guess what? All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Romans 3:23. If we say we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us. 1 John 1:10. So the whole point is, anybody that thinks they're whole and they're righteous without the Lord is in so much denial, is in so much self-deception, they need the Lord worse than anybody, though everybody needs him. Okay? You must understand the need. Okay, let's go back to physical sickness. If you don't think you're really sick, how many of you call on the doctor? Trust me, that's about the last person on the planet I really want to see in any day of my life. For several reasons. By the way, I was going to go into the medical profession when I first started thinking about what I wanted to do for a living. Studied a lot in high school. I had to do with that. Had an uncle who was a dentist. Had another uncle who was with Humana Hospitals in Mobile, Alabama. I mean, I had connections through medical school. I had connections through the hospitals in North Alabama in particular, or really through the state of Alabama with Uncle Jack. And I was thinking, not that I don't have any doors open in this respect, because I knew I did. But the fact of the matter is, long story short, as you know the history now, I didn't go into that field. Well, those that are, I admire you for it. Nurses, doctors, dentists, name the person. Matter of fact, I've had to use doctors many times by which to keep the standard and the quality of life that I have. And you do too. Okay? But how many of you really like doctors? Really deep down inside, you just enjoy going in that office, that waiting room, hearing all of what it has to say, if it's 5 minutes or 2 seconds or however long the bed's, if he's got bedside manner, what? I mean, just like it. Oh, we don't. All right. Then why do we go if we don't like to go? So why do I take medicine that tastes bad? Because I want to get well, right? Has nothing to do with whether it tastes good or whether it hurts or doesn't hurt. It is, I want to get well. I want to be whole. Okay, so part of treatment is understanding they that are in need of a physician know they're in need of a physician. Point number two, once I understand need, now go utilize the doctor. Now go utilize the physician. Why? Because I am not calling an electrician to solve a problem with a stomach ache. Are you? Come on, let's just use some common sense. If I've got a power outage, you call somebody that deals with power, right? If I've got something wrong physically of my health, you call on someone who is in that line, is in that field, right? Does that not make sense? So the picture here is, I've got a problem. I cannot and it will not go away. I cannot fix this on my own. I know an individual who can. Now, let me give the illustration from the Gospels. How many people that had sick folks went a long way to find Jesus? How many people that had sick folks spent a lot of time away from what they normally could do on a day-to-day basis just to go where he was? In Mark's account, in Mark 2, before you ever get to Matthew's calling, there was a time when Jesus is in a building. There are so many people in this house, you can't get another body inside the room. Here are people, four of them, on each corner of a litter, we would call it, or a bearer. The guy on the bearer is sick. They go up on the roof with him, pull the roof apart, and let him down through the roof. Number one, did they understand the need for a physician? Number two, did they utilize every option, every power, every resource within their ability to go get to where the physician is? It's too far. It's crowded. Let's come back tomorrow. There's no excuses, right? We don't make excuses when I understand need and I know where the doctor is. By the way, that's why we call them emergency rooms, right? By the way, how many of us are thankful that those such places even exist? By the way, you don't want to get sick on a weekend, but if it's sick on a weekend, it's sick on a weekend, right? I remember when I was so very, very sick in Thailand that time. Matter of fact, I couldn't keep anything down. I'm not going to spare you the gory details of all of that, but the idea was I'm over 2,000 miles plus away from home. You ever been sick in a foreign country? Listen, you don't want to get sick in a foreign country. I mean, that's sick. By the way, you can be homesick in a foreign country too, and that's sick too. But the idea is what? Immediately, the preacher's wife said, take him to the hospital. I remember hearing her words. By the way, the hospital was a clinic in Chiang Mai. I wouldn't call it a hospital. It was just a clinic. That you had a place you drove in, they had doctors on call 24 hours there. Next thing, going to give you some medicine, you take that, in 2 days you'll be home. I hope this medicine works, by the way. Which brings me to the third point. There's urgency of action. When you really, really, really are sick, I understand the need, I can utilize the doctor, all of a sudden, what do you do? Well, I believe I'll wait till tomorrow. I remember Brother Jerry Bradley. I don't know if Jerry's here. He's here this morning. Jerry, you here? Raise your hand. Okay, but I'll use him anyway. Brother Jerry Bradley was talking to me about this heart attack or this heart condition he had that actually put him in the medical situation he's in right now. He's doing a lot better, folks, just in case you're wondering. But he said, thought it was heartburn. That's first diagnosis, you know, self-diagnosis, right? Okay, get out of bed, sit up, walk around. Hopefully it'll just go away. By the way, laying down, you know, that's what caused it's me laying down, bad food, whatever. I'll get up and walk it off. By the way, sit down, all of a sudden pop out in a sweat. Well, that's not normal. I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting here. Next thing, start hurting in here, starts radiating. Nah. I get up and I'll walk it off. So he walked up a few more hours. Next thing you know, it's not going away. Well, I don't want to wake Debbie. I remember him telling me that. I don't want to wake Debbie. She's in there asleep. It's 3 a.m. now. 3 a.m. How many of y'all ever woke a wife up at 3 a.m.? Okay. By the way, he's sitting there. All of a sudden it comes and goes, and all of a sudden it gets real bad. Finally, he says, Debbie, I need help. Next thing you know, she's woken out of her sleep. What is it? I'm hurting. I need you to call. Next thing you know, she said, you know, the kids are still in bed. Let's not wake them. You know, I'm sure the doctor's office is not going to be open until 8 in the morning. We'll wait till... You know what she did? You know what she did, right? Next thing you know, we've called the hospital. We've called for an ambulance. By the way, the ambulance says, well, it's not real convenient. It's getting close to rush hour. You know, it's going to be tough getting back, right? Did the ambulance get in a hurry? Did the wife get in a hurry? Did the sick guy get in a hurry? When you think something's wrong, what do? You get in a hurry, right? Urgency. Urgency. It all starts with that first point on this wall. Understanding the need. Understanding it. I know where to go. I know where the help can help me. Let's get on it. I don't mean tomorrow. I don't mean the next day. I don't need half a day. I mean right now. As a matter of fact, as I was laying in the ER in Thailand, there's a friend of mine who was in the room with me, and he asked me something about it, and I told him, I want to go home. He said, well, brother, we are in 2 days. I said, you don't understand. I want to go home right now. That's a quote. I want to go home right now. You ever been that sick? When you know something's not right, when it finally dawns on you, you can't deny this anymore. Urgency of action gets in cat climbing gear. It gets in fast motion. Those that don't even think they've got a problem. And I call on a doctor. And since they don't think they need a doctor, they're not in a hurry to fix anything. I'm whole. I need not a physician. I'm righteous. What you're talking about is calling sinners to repentance. I hope it works with them, but that's not a topic that relates to me. And who needed to repent more that day? So now let's come to this passage in Hosea 6 and 6. I'll not go to Hosea 6 and 6, but I would encourage you to read the entire chapter, starting in verse 1. Hosea 6 is an explanation of God through the prophet to the northern kingdom. By the way, the northern kingdom was in a mess. You know, northern kingdom, Israel, after the divided kingdom, following the doctrine of idolatry. You know, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that caused Israel to sin, made calf worship in Dan and Bethel. Well, folks, it's gotten way worse than calf worship at Dan and Bethel by the time you get to Hosea's day. You've gotten down to Ahab and Jezebel. You've gotten down into all these other kind of religions that are now tied into calf worship at Dan and Bethel. And now, fornication, drunkenness, debauchery of all sorts, lewdness, is all over the map in the northern kingdom. Well, here's their idea. As long as I go and offer an animal sacrifice, I am now free to live my life. That was the idea. But Jesus says, go you and learn what this meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice. Now, what he's not saying in that statement is, God doesn't want sacrifice anymore. He doesn't want animal sacrifice. He doesn't want you to go to a worship service. He simply wants you to live a good, clean, moral life. What he's saying there is the opposite of what they were actually believing. You think you can go worship at a place of worship and go out here and live like the devil. That is as far from God as anything can be true. God doesn't want just your sacrifices, though he asked for them. God wants a spirituality attached to what you're showing in an outward form. In other words, if I offer an animal sacrifice and my heart was corrupt, did God accept my worship? Read Isaiah 1 and read Malachi chapter 1. And there's your answer. And the answer is absolutely not. By the way, in Malachi chapter 1, basically God said, and I'm paraphrasing, you should just shut the doors if this is how you think you approach me. You offer the poor, the blind, the maimed, the lame. Offer that to your governor and see if your governor would accept that, which means your civil ruler. Am I not a ruler? Am I not a king? Am I not your God? And you offer me the leftovers and then go out here and live the way you live? Do I want sacrifice? You better believe I want sacrifice. Without the shedding of blood, there is no what? Hebrews 9:22. There is no remission of sins. But by the way, you can shed blood and still be wrong. That's what Hosea is saying. You can go to worship and fast twice a week and give tithes of all that you possess. If you think you don't have a sin problem of a moral nature, of a religious nature that you've got to deal with, all your worship services do not appeal to me. Malachi, shut the doors. Isaiah chapter 1, your sacrifices is a stench in my nose. It's not a sweet savor. So the idea is you are to show mercy to your fellow man, not abuse and use your fellow man as they were doing. The fatherless, the widow, the poor, the needy, the stranger, they were taking advantage of these people. Oh, but by the way, we wouldn't dare miss a service on a Sabbath day. We wouldn't dare miss taking an animal sacrifices at a holy day. And God says, you think that's exactly what I'm asking you to do? Worship without spiritual living, without true moral living. Jesus illustrates that not as righteousness. He illustrates that as a sickness of the soul. The publicans and the sinners understood that. What does Zacchaeus say in Luke 19? When Jesus says, come down, I'm going to dine with you. He's dining in Zacchaeus' house. Next thing, Zacchaeus makes the statement. Half my goods I sell and give the poor, and if I have defrauded anybody anything, I will restore it fourfold. You know what Jesus said to Zacchaeus in Luke 19? Today, this day, is salvation come to this house. For he too, not two in number, he too is a son of Abraham. The very idea that Jesus would call a Pharisee, a publican, a son of Abraham. How many scribes and Pharisees would have got that? Not a one. Why? If you're a child of Abraham, we're children of Abraham, they'd say. So when you're talking about spiritual need, you're talking about where is the source of spiritual need. And you get in a hurry to take care of it. I've often thought about in the book of Acts, and it applies as much today as it did in the days in which Luke wrote the book of Acts. How many times in the examples of those that were converted in the book of Acts, from Acts 2 all the way to Acts 28, last chapter, how many times when a person knew they were lost and they asked the question what to do and they were given the correct answer as to what to do, how many times do you find in the book of Acts people who understood they were in need, asked the right question, were told the right answer, how many of them put it off? Give me an example, anywhere in the book of Acts, where they did not do it right then. By the way, the Bible word is straightway. Straightway. Did about 3,000 in Acts 2 put it off? How about the eunuch? When there's an opportunity, see, here's water, what hinders me from being by that? Did he put it off? How about Cornelius and his family? Did he put it off? How about the Philippian jailer, by the way, at midnight? It's midnight now. Did he wait till the rising of the sun? See, there's urgency in there. Why is there so urgency in taking care of spiritual needs? You know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It's but a vapor. It appears for a little time, vanishes away. We don't know when the Lord's going to come back, but that you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we'll do this or that. But know not the time. By the way, he comes as a thief in the night. He doesn't come announcing it. He comes, as it were, at the blink of an eye. By the way, why would a person want to put off what's in their best interest? You will find rest to your soul. Guilt taken away. Your sins and your iniquities, I remember no more. We'll close this lesson tonight with an illustration. I won't call this person's name, but I remember after this person was baptized, I was in the room back there. I'd gotten the waiters off, and they were finishing up with the final, I had their clothes back on, the straight clothes, and I asked him, I said, now how do you feel? When it was all over, now how do you feel? And here was the statement. I don't know why I did not do this sooner. That's a quote. And I said, and you don't have to think about this ever again. You don't ever have to struggle during every invitation song saying, well, I know what this is about, and I know why this is about, and I fit why we have invitation song. I said, now, when we sing invitation songs, your singing is an encouragement for somebody else that needs to do what you did. So, exhort them to do what now you don't have to think about it anymore. That's done. Days are filled with sorrow and care. Hearts are lonely and drear. Burdens are lifted at Calvary. Jesus is very near. If you're subject tonight to be baptized into Christ or to come home, David is going to lead us in the song. Those of us that know our need, we've applied the physician, still got work to do, still got that spirituality to work on, but let us all encourage those who need to be what we are. If you need to come home, you're among friends. While we stand and sing, let us exhort you, will you not come?